most likely need a rewire. You most likely need the new heating system.
They don't realize all the carpets have to come back up. No, all the things exactly. have to come back up. And yeah. dust is going to be everywhere.
Manky.
Yeah.
So I do try and talk sense into some people who are, you know, who just aren't aware of, I suppose, the complexities
yeah.
of what's involved. So that's how the first stage of it, I suppose, works. So I'll do the questionnaire, as I say, I'll meet them on site, I'll walk through the house with them, and then I'll do a measure. And while I'm walking with them, they'll kind of give me an insight into how they imagine the space being, and I'll point out some things that I'd kind of be concerned about, be it the wiring or whatever, you know.
Would this be like after, would this be prior to them going sale agreed? Would this then, would you... Like, do you do a service where you'd nearly go on a view? Because imagine if someone, yeah. like, and we have to, like, this is, the fact of life is, people will spend more time buying a car and, you know, checking the clutch and checking the thing. And when they go to buy a house, their brains just switch off.
Yeah.
There was a young couple I seen walking out the door, and that's all they were talking about was having kids and making babies in the back garden was lovely. I was like, you don't realize what you've just even yeah. attempted to bid on there.
Yeah.
Like, no brains, but can you...
Welcome to Platinum Property Training's podcast, where we will be talking about business, money, and let's not forget the economy, real estate, and bringing in real inspirations. These are people that are doing some great things in our world. Like, share, add this to your playlist, and subscribe to keep track of our updates. Okay, you beautiful people, sit back, relax, let's listen, and let's get down to business.
Okay, you are very welcome back to this week's podcast. And today we have a really, really exciting guest again. We do pick the best. we have a very, very exciting guest today, and we're going to be talking about renovating properties and Shay's business. Shay Lally, you're very welcome in the studio today.
Thank you, Paul. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. We're really looking forward to this one. So Shay owns a company called House Restore. So obviously, the wording is in there. You restore houses back to the finest. What... way they should be.
Absolutely.
So, Shay, just give us a little bit of an insight of what House Restore means to you and where you came up with the name.
Yeah, so I'm a quantity surveyor, and I always had an interest in property, really, prior to even being a QS, I had an interest in property. And I came up with this idea, like, I kind of have a funny background in the sense that I used to be a full-time percussion player until I was about 22 or 23, and then I retrained to be a quantity surveyor. But when I first went to college, I came up with this idea. I used to always be looking at myhome.ie, and I came up with this idea that there should be a version of myhome.ie with just houses that need to be refurbished or renovated, and that there should be a guide as to how to go about the whole thing, like how to go about renovating a house, basically. And like, I was about 19 at the time. There was no Instagram. There was nothing like that on Facebook at the time. It just wasn't the vibe, you know? And the idea came and went a few times, and then the lockdown came, obviously, a couple of years ago. And it was then I said, you know what, I'm actually going to give this a go, because I'd seen one or two other people do something similar. And I didn't really think that'd be a vibe on Instagram, but I realized that other pages were successful. So I set it up, and initially it just began like to be a case of me finding a house, putting it up, sharing it, and highlighting some of the things I do. And then I suppose the cost side, like as in the QSME came out, and I began to share like, okay, it's going to cost X amount per square meter, or I'd watch out for this, or I'd watch out for that, or whatever. And people began to latch onto that. And the numbers just sort of went through the roof. And it was probably because of a number of reasons. People wanted to be entertained at home. So there was a bit of probably entertainment because they were spending more time on their phones.
Yes.
And then we also had, everything was going up in cost and people were panicking. So they were probably looking for a bit of guidance because they were getting quotes back and the quotes were crazy. So all that probably helped the page, I suppose, you know. So pre-houses to restore, like work-wise, I was running a facilities business, doing an awful lot of commercial painting, like repainting commercial buildings. I wasn't doing that myself now, but I had a team of lads that were doing it for me. And then doing other things, like you'd go into a building, maybe like replace ceiling tiles, carpet tiles, that sort of stuff, and spruce places up. And then Houses to Restore is a funny one, because I've met so many people through Houses to Restore. And there's a fella, and I think he's watching tonight, Tom Rooney. And Tom Rooney rang me during one of the lockdowns. He said, I'm after meeting a man called Michael, and he's looking for someone to renovate a house. I told him you'd renovate the house for him. So up until that point, like even though I had Houses to Restore, I wasn't into doing work in residential properties. Like I was very much a commercial man, you know? So we had the lockdown, and there was only so much work we could do, we were permitted to do. So I said, you know what, actually we'll do the house, because we were permitted to do the house. And it went really, really well. And your man was delighted. The client was delighted. We got through the work, I think, in like 9 weeks. We kind of, you know, tarted the house up, for want of a better word, in the space of 9 weeks. And he turned around to me and said, "I'm after doing a similar job in Limerick and it took me 9 months. How did you do it in 9 weeks?" And that kind of snowballed then, and I just began to take more and more on. So essentially, I operate it now like a management contractor, you know. So I'm the project manager and I do the QS and P's and the cost management. And then we'll sub out the work to all of the different trades. So you've
built up a great little team now.
Yeah. So it basically started, as I say, from an idea I had when I was 19 and did nothing about it. And then, I don't know, 15 years later, I did something about it. And then it's snowballed into getting loads of projects and renovating houses for people. You know, it's mad.
Brilliant, brilliant. Yeah, and shout out to Tom Rooney. I saw he served a lot of people around here very well.
Because, he's great.
As you know, in the training company, everyone gets in and the first thing they want to do is, "I want to buy a property."
Yeah.
And I was like, calm the jets a little bit. And then Tom would go down, he'd have a look at the property, and maybe that, you know, even with a bit of training behind you, he could tell them, "Look, this isn't quite that such a deal you've seen. It needs a rewire, it needs a rethink." And Tom would break it down for them, give them a full report, cost you a couple of €100. And next thing you're there going, "Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
This is the real world." And that's what really kicks in. So your interest then of going through the process and you built a beautiful pen. Tom actually told me to go and watch it one time. And I started looking through it and I was like, Jesus, they're all good projects.
Yeah.
When I'm buying deals, I'm focused in one or two areas where you'll throw up loads of different things and it's really, really interesting. And, you know, it has a great following. And my wife always follows it too and she's always looking at different projects. So take me back. You used to look at it, like it. Then it turned into a bit of a business.
Yeah.
Now you're like, "Oh, Jesus, this thing is at the kicking off. Now I can make some money out of something I like."
It's gone crazy. And I think I'm just lucky that like I kind of have this opportunity, but it's like making sure now that I suppose like get the benefit of the opportunity or I do it in the right way and I'm just clever about it, you know, which is always a challenge. And we're in such a mad market at the moment, like between, okay, I'm meeting clients and they're getting outbid on properties and then the price of doing the work and it just causes so much stress. So even though things are great and there's loads of work, there's loads of challenges to get around as well. And even then, like you mentioned, a team, like trying to find good lads is a challenge, you know. Trying to find bad lads, not that you'd be looking for them, but you can't even find a bad fella at the moment, you know. And that's also a thing, you know. So there's a couple of things to balance, I guess, you know, and you have to be careful.
You hit the nail right in the head there. My original past life, I was plumbing, heating and building. And when I went into property investing, you do get a little bit lazy because when he comes in, you don't really have to do too much. You hit the nail right in the head now. It's a major, major challenge now. So I found myself, which we were talking about before the cameras went on here, I found myself drifting back into project managing, mucking in. We just cannot get decent lads. Like, we just can't get them and hold them. And if you do get them and you do hold them, you're paying them a chunk.
Serious money,
Yeah, so that leads us to, like, again, and sometimes when I'm talking about this, people don't really understand it, but they definitely will because you specialize in this because you're a QS.
Yeah.
So if you're looking in at a project, say, on House to Restore, give us like an insight of what may trigger your eyes to see the project.
When I'm looking at them, so like, okay, so with Houses to Restore, like sometimes I have to pick stuff that's kind of clickbaity. Like, let's be honest. So I have to pick a project or find something like that's, you know, a house that's in, I won't say the middle of nowhere, but it's up for 50 grand.
Yeah.
That's going to attract loads of eyes because people want to see what 50 grand buys. Yeah. So there's loads of different types of projects. But then a lot of the time I go after the stuff that I like, you know, as in the houses that appeal to me. So like I love anything that has a bit of red brick. And anyone who follows the page will know that, you know, like a red brick Victorian house, I'm all over it, you know? So I do love those projects, I have to say. So I'll look at that and I'll kind of say, okay, well, look, if I was to take that project on, how much would it cost me to rewire it? How much would it cost me to put in a new heating system and all that sort of lark? How much would it be to extend it if it needs to be extended? Any of the remodeling works, whatever. And I'll just give a breakdown. And like anyone who's following me a while will see, like, there's a consistent breakdown, as in, like, I'll cover off things like strip out, demo and alterations, any building work that's needed, you know, insulating, electrics, plumbing, as I say, if it needs other work, like maybe a new roof or something like that, you know, and I'll just put all those costs up. And because that's the good thing about it is because I'm actively taking on projects and I'm like what you're saying, I'm actively paying an electrician and a plumber and a bricklayer, you know, what's what, you know, where the market's at. So people might say, Jesus, they're wild numbers that you're putting up there. But I'd be lying to people if I told them you'll get this done for cheaper because you won't get it done for cheaper, you know? And that's, And that's the reality of it, you know? So, yeah, so a lot of the properties I feature are ones that I like the look of, but then I have to be conscious that, look, you have to appeal to a wider base, you know? Yeah. So that'd be that. And then, like, in, say, the story post side of things, the stuff I'll feature then will be the projects that we're currently working on, and I'll point out a few things or explain things to people. Like, often I'll be talking about, you know, insulated plasterboard. The average person who follows me has no idea what that even looks like, you know? Yeah, yeah. So you might just show up a photo of it, or the client might have picked a nice colour scheme on a house that's coming to an end, and you might throw a few photos up, and then you'll get a few questions about, what colours are they? You know, just for a bit of engagement, because people love all that, you know? Yeah. So I suppose it's a mixed bag. And then the challenge with it is that because you get so busy then with work, it's difficult to actually be fresh in the mind to come up with really good content.
Yeah, because you're dealing with the problem of the refurb. Which is,
you know?
Yeah.
So it's just having the time as well is a big thing. So we've been slacking now a little bit.
Look, we all do.
The content, you know?
Look, I mean, when you get really busy, life takes over and you have to have a bit of a life too. I know you've put your heart and soul into that, as you can see in the page.
Yeah.
You really love it.
Yeah.
But again, you still have to have a life. You still have to go out with people, enjoy yourself.
Yeah, yeah. 100%.
Turn off. But again, that brings me back then. So, like, my calling card when I'm buying properties is, say, Tom Rooney may have been in there, and or any surveyor, there's hundreds of them in the country. And, you know, Sharon and Tom has looked at this property in Dunar, say. We've just bought one down in Dunar, Red Brick. Throw you the keys if you can have a look at it. But again, we would have bought one down there. It's red brick. It sold for huge money. The people really loved it, wanted the project. Surveyor got in there, came back with needed new roofs, new doors, new windows, new heating system. Didn't add up to the bank, deal collapsed. Went back in the open market again. We're watching at this point. We track everything if we're interested in a project. Up in the open market, sold again for mad money. Same thing happened. Then the deal collapsed. That's where I go in, guns blazing, and try and get a deal.
Yeah.
But again, for that average person that may have got that over the line, like, I know what it's like to refurb these things. You know what it's like to refurb these things. But these people that may be paying $600,000 for a house that needs what me and you can do, like, how do you cost that out properly to say someone that might have said to you, Shay, I'm looking at this unit. It looks like it needs a good bit of work. But I think it's like 80 grand. Sean's going to do a bit. Shay's going to do a bit. My uncle's going to strip it out. And then you sit down with them and say, obviously, well, look, let's look at this properly, because you're not going to be able to do it all. Both of you working full time. Your uncle might strip the kitchen out for you, but he's not coming back to strip down plasterboard ceilings. Yeah.
And that's the thing. Like, you're spot on in what you're saying. And like, you just meet a lot of people who are, I hate using the word, but there is a naivety there. And the challenge is, I don't know if it's because there's so many property related TV shows, you know. I don't know if it's a case of that, but I think people think they know more than they actually know, you know. Because I know myself, I run into problems every day of the week. I'm sure you run into problems every day of the week. And we're both around it the whole time, you know. So there is a naivety. So I suppose part of the process that I have when I'm dealing with clients is I start off with a home renovation assessment. That starts off with a questionnaire. I'll send them the questionnaire and ask them to fill it out. There'll be questions like, how long are you planning to live in the house? Do you want to extend? Do you want to just remodel? Do you want to renovate part of the house, all of the house? I'll try and get an understanding of what they really want.
Yeah.
And then the next stage is I'll go and I'll meet them in the house and we'll have a look at everything. And I do try and get people to think long term, because sometimes people think, it doesn't really need a rewire. And sure, the rads are grand. And they're saying, well, this is our forever home. And it's like, well, if this is your forever home, you need you most likely need a rewire. You most likely need the new heating system.
They don't realize all the carpets have to come back up.
No,
all the things
exactly.
Have to come back up. And dust is going to be everywhere.
Manky.
Yeah.
So I do try and talk sense into some people who are, you know, who just aren't aware of, I suppose, the complexities of what's involved. So that's how the first stage of it, I suppose, works. So I'll do the questionnaire, as I say, I'll meet them on site, I'll walk through the house with them, and then I'll do a measure. And while I'm walking with them, they'll kind of give me an insight into how they imagine the space being, and I'll point out some things that I'd kind of be concerned about, be it the wiring or whatever, you know.
Would this be prior to them going sale agreed, do you do a service where you'd nearly go on a view? Because imagine if someone, this is the fact of life is, people will spend more time buying a car and, you know, checking the clutch and checking the thing and when they go to buy a house, their brains just switch off.
Yeah.
There was a young couple I seen walking out the door, and that's all they were talking about was having kids and making babies in the back garden. Was lovely. I was like, you don't realize what you've just even attempted to bid on there.
Yeah.
Like, no brains. But do you go on viewings with people? Or?
Yeah. So I suppose, like, there's a couple of times when I'd meet someone. So one would be someone has put in a bid and it's been accepted. Okay. So I met one girl last week and she was looking at buying a house and she wanted to see ultimately if her budget would cover what she wanted to do. So she was at the sale agreed point. I'm meeting someone tomorrow. They own the house. They've been living in the house. I don't know how long they've been living in the house, but they're now at a stage where they want to renovate the house.
Yeah.
So they'd be, I suppose, the two most common types of people. I'm always a bit worried about when I meet someone who's gone sold and isn't really sure what they're letting themselves in for, because something that they might think is 100 grand and then it ends up being 200 grand, where does that leave them, you know? So the two most common things are the sale agreed stage or someone who's actually lived in the house for a while. And that's actually not a bad place to be. I think a lot of people, particularly Irish people, like the idea of buying a fixer-upper, doing absolutely everything to it and then moving into a show house. But they've no idea of where the light comes from, how the house flows and what they actually need from the house.
Yeah.
So I think when someone does live in a house for a little while, I think there's actually an added benefit to that, you know?
Yeah.
So they're the two stages, and it's something that people can book in for through the Houses to Restore website. There's a booking portal, and that's how it works.
And then they have the comfort of going, having someone there by the side before they spend 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Yeah.
I don't know. You probably, like, looking at your page, stuff goes into millions.
So. Mad money. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mad
money. I mean, if you're going to spend that money and you've never even talked about a property, you'd be absolutely crazy then not to try and jump on and learn something or maybe take you along to the viewing with them.
And I put like a spreadsheet together. So like all of the costs will be there from start to finish. And then if there's things we're discussing, like say the house last week, just because I was doing it up earlier for her, like so it was fresh in my brain, there was a talk of like, you know, making the two reception rooms interconnecting, but it was something that was up in the air. So you can have a section where you have all these additional items or these ideas and you can kind of see how much they're likely to cost. So as a result, then someone gets a feel for what they can afford to do essentially, you know, and you can break that budget down as well. Like you can say, right, these are the things you have to do. Like, you know, you have to rewire it. You have to put in the new heating system, depending on the condition of the house. You have to replace the roof again or new windows or whatever it is. And then there's some things that, like, say a kitchen. They need to fit a kitchen. But then there's another list of things that are nice things to have, but they don't necessarily need. Like, they might have no kids and they might be buying a 4-bed house. They don't have to put carpet or floors into the 3 other bedrooms because they don't need them immediately. They don't have to put utility units in, you know? So you can manipulate then.
Herringbone floors or the
So you can manipulate the costings then to say, well, look, it's 200 grand, but look, you only have 170, so take these things out of it, but make sure you put your roof light in your extension or whatever. So you're doing all of the things that you're not going to go back and do at a later point. You're doing all those things now. The house is weather tight, and then it's kind of like the fit outside of things. You might just put some of those parts on pause and phase some of those parts. So that's how that's done. And it, like, I personally think, and it's not because it's me that's doing it. I think I'm shocked there's not more people offering that service. I have to say, like, there's not many people going out and doing it, and I'm really surprised at it. But there is also an element of, as you say, like someone buying a house for 600,000, 700,000, even 1.6 million and having no feel for how much it's going to cost them to renovate it.
Yeah, but that's just crazy, isn't it?
I think it's reckless, like, I have to say. So I do think it's worth its weight in gold. But however, I do find then as well is that, and this is part of the reason why I've shifted away from being a full-time QS, is that I don't know if people really value information. I think people value someone coming in and say, taking out the ceiling that's above us, you know, because they can physically see what's being done and they think, oh, well, that's great. But you could put 100 grand into a space, and loads of people I meet don't want to engage with an architect or an interior designer or anything. But that's how you add the value, by having a really good architect or interior designer involved, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I know Lifestyles Plans. Have you seen John's new deck out over there? That's super.
Yeah.
So then, just take me back then. So you obviously, how many people are you seeing, or how many times are you answering questions on grants, and are you getting bombarded with the grant situation?
Inundated, yeah.
Are you? Okay.
Yeah. The two big ones, obviously, the SEAI and the Vacant Homes Grant. Like, the Vacant Homes Grant, it's great in theory, but it's a bit of a nuisance, you know? Let's face it, it's just... it's a bit tedious to try and actually get approval. And then the drawdown, I don't know what the statistics are on the drawdown, but I think they're pretty low, aren't they? Like,
I'm not hearing too... Well, I haven't... I hear a lot of people talking about it.
Yeah.
But, you know, and you got a lot of auctioneers saying, well, no, you get the 70 grand grant. Yeah. And the people are like, there's another 70 grand, I told you.
Yeah.
I'm like, Jesus Christ, are you going to, you know, I don't know if that's going over the line fully. You're obviously, I've heard of a few that got it.
Yeah.
But I mean, the processing behind that isn't as easy as it looks.
No, it sounds simple, but it really isn't.
Yeah.
It is a good idea, to be fair, but it's just the logistics of it or the practicalities of it aren't absolutely really working. It's not fit for purpose. I do think, in my mind, and I thought it was interesting, I was kind of keeping, I wouldn't be political, like, but I was keeping an eye on the local elections and stuff like that, you know, and in some ways it is a local issue, maybe more so in rural Ireland. And like, there was no one kind of really talking about housing. Now, I know there are local kind of councillors, you know, but at the same time, I think there is scope for someone to say, well, look, I think we need to have like someone in from the department that looks after these grants, and they come into a locality and they have a clinic, and be it on Zoom or face-to-face, and you can book in for a session and say, look, this is the house I own. This is the house I've inherited. This is the house I'm planning to buy. This is what I'd like to do with it. Like, will I get approved for this grant, basically? So the department is actually given that information in real time, because the rules have changed so much.
Yeah.
And it's difficult for an outsider like myself or yourself or whoever to be guiding people on it, because the rules have changed so much. And it's a full-time job keeping up with the rules, you know? Yeah. So I do think that would be really, really helpful if they had that person there to say, yeah, well, you would actually qualify for this. Or even a couple can go in and say, well, look, here's our application. How does this application look?
Yeah.
Is rent we need to change, you know? Absolutely. So it is a bit precarious. Yeah. And then obviously the other big one is the SEAI. Like, that's a big one.
Entertain me on this one now, because this is where I normally zoned out, because it could take you, like, now don't get me wrong, we have a great company in here, Homology too.
Mm.
One of our guys really specializes in this. Like, I mean, Robbie rips places asunder really fast. You'll see all his boarding going up, his projects on it throughout Dublin. But I mean, he rips these things around. So his job's to try and take your energy rate. And as you know, they're back to against mortgages now too.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's really, really important. And it's a big, big space. And the don't quote me exactly on the funding put aside to bring up home energy ratings. It's huge.
Oh, it's massive, yeah.
So him and his team, and you think he's about 30 of them working with him all together now, if they go in, they will go to place. It's heat pumps, underfloor heating. If there's any voids, they're taking out. He done a talk for us upstairs for us. Brilliant, absolutely brilliant. But they're doing that right at the start. So if you take the NAR, I used his team to go down and tell me how I'm going to take this property without me trying to guess, because we can all guess.
Yeah.
Are we going to get a B2? But his one of his guys, I think they call it, it's not, he's probably going to be screaming when he hears this, because he told me a million times. It's like a diagnostic of how you take it from to a B2, and it's guaranteed. And it's easy for us then, because we just follow the script.
Yeah.
And we're guaranteed our B2 once we commit to it. But I mean, for selling the property, it's priceless. And for anyone that's buying an A property or a B property, it's much better than having a D or a C.
100%. And I even think that the language on these BERs need to change as well, because people become so obsessed with the letter. And it's like, lads, you have to look at it like this. Like, what's going to be the cheaper property to like run as such, you know?
Yeah.
You're going to have lower overheads if you have an A or a B rated home in comparison to a D, E or F rated home. Like, let's face it. And what house is going to be more comfortable to live in 12 months of the year? Like, and we all know the answer. So I think people just become so focused on the letter, but there are consequences of having a high letter or an A or a B are those things. The house is cheaper to run and it's like more comfortable to live in. And that, I think that's a huge thing. And I do think that it's interesting that that isn't necessarily being sold, but there's no one really selling that. Like, that's the reality of it. Like, you know, there's nothing worse than being in a cold, drafty house in the wintertime, or you're getting your bill and it's sky high, you know?
Well, the other thing we consider as well is you don't get younger in this world. You get older. So picture someone that's maybe has gone through the last two or three winters, which in this country is quite cold. And they've sitting in an E house. Their husband may have died. They lit the fire for them all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're sitting there. They might have a couple of grand in the bank, 30,000 or 40,000 sitting there. And they have literally shaken themselves for the whole winter. It's so uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Whereas the likes of if Homology went in there, and there are loads of other companies out there too, and explained to someone, well, we can have you sitting in this house comfortable, and here's how we can do it.
Yeah.
You know, people will listen, and the grants are there to help it too. So
yeah.
We should definitely use them, and there should be a little bit more education on how you can take that out. Because if you explain to someone in their 70s how they're not going to be shivering at 9 o'clock in the morning to 7 or 8 o'clock at night, time the house actually warms up,
yeah,
it's a sin.
Ah, yeah.
So great investment needed to bring up a lot of homes out there as well.
Yeah.
How many times do you get this question when a young couple say young couple from Renle, both in the legal profession, say, both on good wages, and they see a property, say, in Renle, and it's 600,000. And you from your survey know that you need 250,000 to take in to a B and to pull out the work that they want to get in the property. And say the property's nudging at 650,000, you're pre-talks to them, and they're saying, you're trying to tell them, well, look, you know, this is now going to cost you 250 on top of that, so I wouldn't be bidding any more here now. And they're like, well, shit, it's going up and up and up.
Yeah.
You know, and they're stretching themselves really far.
Yeah.
And then next thing, it hits 700,000. The 250 work still has to be done.
Yeah.
Then they start to try and tell themselves about their uncle, their auntie, and maybe the few bob cash they have. But realistically, when a building team needs to go in, you're definitely going to get that 250 build.
Yeah.
How many times do you feel that's happening out there in the market now, the way markets are going?
Yeah, I think it's happening a lot. And I think people are really pushing themselves to buy things at an inflated price. But I do also think, like, they're kind of probably caught between a rock and a hard place, because if they don't buy something at a slightly inflated price, because we've such a poor supply at the moment, realistically, in a year's time, that property isn't going down in value. It's probably going to go up further, you know? And that's the challenge. And I think that's the mindset a lot of people have. So people are putting themselves under pressure to go beyond where they should go. And I think that's why the market is just so crazy. I think there's just panic at the moment. Like, that's just my take on it. I think it's a different conversation if it's a couple who want to live in Ranelagh for the rest of their days. They were renting down the road. They love it. And one of them's from around the corner. And, you know, they've been living there for 5 or 10 years together and they really like it, you know. And they're looking to buy there and they're going to set up home there, you know. I think in the grand scheme of things, the 50 grand is irrelevant if they have the money, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But then there's other couples that just have to pull out because they realize, Jesus, like, the price of this house, and there's exactly as you say, and they're just at a situation where they only have, for argument's sake, 750,000 euro. The house started at 500. They knew they'd have to put 250 into it. It's way beyond their league and it's just not happening for them.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not happening for them, you know. Yeah. So you have two types, I suppose, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And it's crazy because, as you said, there is a major, major supply issue out here.
Oh, yeah.
And people are getting pushed over the edge. I spoke to an auctioneer, interviewed him probably about a year ago, and he said, yeah, we're at the top. Everything's going to relax now.
Yeah.
That's a year ago. We must have went up 15 or 16 more percent since.
Yeah.
And I spoke to him about 2 weeks ago because I was trying to buy another unit off him. And same thing, he said, how wrong was I?
Yeah.
Like, we just completely are wrong. So where do you, like, with your expertise and you're watching all these properties and you're probably watching them to the end till they sell. And what's your expertise with the market now? Where do you think we're at with it? What do you think, we're in a dangerous place? Do you think this is the new money side of things?
We just don't think what's going on is sustainable. Like, sustainable, and I know we all talk about, you know, CO2 emissions and all as being sustainable, but I just don't think property and building and everything in the country is sustainable at the moment, you know. Like, it's not working for us in any shape or form, you know. And that would be my worry, really. The other thing is that, like, we don't really know how many houses we need to be building every year. Like, every time you see a report, and it changes massively. I think I've seen anything from 50,000 to 120,000 units a year. Like, it's like, there's a big difference between 50,000 units and 120,000 units. So the supply is a huge thing. And I really just don't know how they're going to get around it, because we need workers to come in from abroad, because we just don't have the workers here. And even if there's people willing and able to come from abroad, we've nowhere to house these people.
Yeah.
So it's just a double whammy, you know. I also think, Paul, like, and I'm a bit like a broken record talking about this, but I also think our mindset on property and housing needs to change as well in Ireland. I think a lot of people think, look, we all need a 3-bed semi-detached house, you know, your side gate or your garage or your shed and your back garden and your front garden or whatever the case may be. As you were saying about the couple having the kids, sure, isn't it great? Lovely back garden, happy days. But there's a time in your life where a lot of people do need that when they're having a family. But there's also a time in life where they don't need that. So if someone's in their 20s, they don't need that, you know, and they're single. There's also people who live in Dublin during the week and then they go back down to Limerick or Cork or Galway. They're involved with the local guy club down there and they've no interest really in putting down roots in Dublin. They just happen to have a well-paid job in Dublin and they're enjoying it because they're getting great experience, but they're never ever going to live in Dublin. And because there's such few, so as housing options, those people are like renting apartments that they don't even want. They're renting houses they don't want. They're doing house shares. They're doing things that they don't want simply because they need a roof over their heads while they're in Dublin. That removes housing stock, you know?
Yeah.
And then we look at the conundrum of, okay, we've loads of vacant commercial buildings. And I'm not talking about industrial buildings because I know that was done in the UK and it was a shit show, to be fair. I wouldn't really be in favour of that. But office blocks, when you look at an office block, like the floor plate in a lot of them is suitable and a lot of them isn't suitable. You know, you have to assess each one. It's not just a blanket yay or nay. So I think a lot of those properties, though, when you start looking at some of the commercial stuff, I think they're suitable for like a kind of shared living type space whereby you might effectively have like a six bedroom apartment where all of the bedrooms are really comfortable. They're quite spacious. There's like, say, a desk, a really good, you know, shower room ensuite. And then you have a nice, comfortable living space. There's a communal kitchen, communal sitting room space, whatever. And it means then that there's a lot of people who want a place in Dublin or people who are maybe here for a couple of months or for a year or something. And they have something that's suitable for them. So they're not taking up houses, you know. We're creating beds for people, you know. And I know a lot of people have tried this. Like Richard Barrett tried that with his Barrett Capital. And like there was massive objection to what he did. But I think we need to look at all of the different product types that we need in property.
Yeah.
And I think our thing is, oh, well, we just need houses. We don't just need houses. And I think if we did that and we had those sorts of units, I think it would free up a lot of houses and provide a lot of accommodation. And it would also make it easier for people to come from abroad because they'd know, well, look, there is actually some accommodation there for me. I'm only going to Dublin for 2 years.
Yeah.
I want to make money. I don't want big rents. That bedroom would suit me down to the ground. Sure, I'm going to be out working 6 days a week anyway.
Yeah.
You know?
So commercial to resi buildings.
Yeah.
Yeah. We done a course in that last year. Commercial to resi course, great course.
Yeah.
Opens up your eyes to a lot of stuff and opens up your eyes to a lot of planning issues. Again, tricky buildings to work in. You need to know your stuff.
Yeah.
So we would have broken the whole thing right back down, showed a different few projects. And there's definitely room in the market for that. Like you drive around Dublin at the moment, these buildings are sitting there and people are not looking at them.
Yeah.
They're like, they're either think, this could be the other thing that's happening. It's just far too hard work.
Yeah.
Which it definitely is difficult to do.
Yeah.
Or else your eyeballs just aren't on them. Maybe investors or eyeballs just haven't quite twigged that lump of gold can be very profitable and it can serve very, very well if done correctly.
Yeah. I think like I did a radio interview on this and there was a chat about it, you know, and a bit of a debate about it. And someone made the argument that these buildings, like sure, someone took the risk out of them in the 60s and the 70s because someone dug the ground and they did all that sort of stuff. But let's face it, like if you're buying an old office building, no different than buying an old house, there are going to be problems. There are going to be things like rising damp. The roof does have to be replaced. There's a massive thing with those ventilation, like general M&E, because the M&E in the commercial building and a resi is just totally different, obviously, you know. So there's all these things to consider. But that's why I'd go back and say, like, look, they're conducive to the shared living space because there's less services and less ventilation if six people are using one kitchen rather than putting in loads of one-bed apartments and everyone needing their own kitchen.
Yeah.
You know, you'd have ducting going everywhere. You know what I mean? So that's my thought process on that. Well, it's definitely a difficult one. You know, I think there's a lack of security there maybe. So it's a bit of a gamble for an investor to jump in and do that. And there's a friend of mine and he's a property developer and like, he's building housing estates now and he said he finds building a housing estate easier than renovating a one-off house. And he was renovating one-off houses.
Yeah.
Because there's just, the system is different. Whereas if you're building houses, you get a system going and it's just like a conveyor belt. Whereas when you're renovating a property, it's more challenging to have that system in place. Oh my God,
you hit the nail on the head. Yeah. As I said to you earlier on as well, when we were talking backstage, you were saying, am I still involved? And you hear my voice in the dust today. My eyeballs look like two things. Like they are difficult, really difficult, which leads me on to the next question.
Yeah.
And they're really, really difficult to do. And people get involved in property and the first thing they want to do is, I want a lump of cash. Our Homes Under the Hammer have destroyed this. Everyone in Ireland watches Homes Under the Hammer. It's a great, great show. But when they come back 19 months later and they've spent $5,000, there's a bit of a scam there somewhere. Someone's not telling the truth.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Again, if you're getting into the flipping space, it is difficult. And what I say to people as well is you have to be very careful. You're not just buying work.
Yeah.
Because there's tons of work out there if you're a tradesman.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts on flipping property?
It's interesting.
Think it's easy?
No, I don't. I think it's easy if you've. I'll say I think it's easy. I think if you have some experience in the building game, you know what you're letting yourself in for. But there's people who maybe have come into money and now they're deciding, oh, I'm going to get into flipping property. They don't know anything about construction. And it would be like me opening a car garage and buying loads of cars to sell. I wouldn't have a clue. Like, I know what cars I like to look at, but mechanically, I wouldn't really
it's
know.
It's like going in to change a clutch in a car. Yeah. I don't think people think about it properly, do they?
No, you wouldn't have a clue, you know. But one thing I've seen is that like a lot of people, you see them online and, you know, I was saying this to you before we kicked off. They're filling their boots, their cars with sanitary ware and tiles and they're shopping around and they're doing all this sort of stuff. And as someone said to me, if you buy a house to flip, it's likely going to be an 18-month process from the time you first went to view that house until you sell the house.
Yeah.
Between, you know, the whole bidding war, the legals, you know, getting your Tom Rooney in. Tom's getting a great plug today,
Tom's
isn't
getting
he?
A good plug here now.
He's to do something for me next week. I'm hoping he'll go a little bit lighter on the
tea. I can tell you now, as long as I know the man, he's never let me down once. So
no, he's brilliant.
And I've had to ask him to go on last one. We were getting such a good deal. I said, Tom, I'm going to need you just to triple check this.
Yeah, yeah. Just in case.
Yeah, yeah, it is X, Y, and Z. And that's brilliant. But yeah, sorry.
I've lost my train of thought. Are we talking
people
about
the stuff in the cars.
Yeah, yeah. The sanitary wear and all that sort of stuff, you know. But there is like, it's not far off 18 months between going to first view it, all the legal piece, getting the deal over the line, like buying the house, and then you start doing the work, you start figuring out what you want to do to the house, you know, and then you get stuck in and you do the work. It's not a linear, you know, process of renovating a house. You're going to hit a wall. Someone's not going to turn up. Someone's going to start a job. They're going to disappear for 2 weeks. There's all sorts of delays. Tiles you want won't be in stock or they'll run out of something or you know yourself. And you have all these
constant bits,
you know. And then someone will say, well, I made 50 grand off that deal. But it actually took them 18 months and they put a massive amount of their own time into it. They've financed the deal. They took a massive gamble. And if the market, okay, we're in an upward market at the moment.
Yeah.
But if the market was to dip and you're taking that gamble and you're putting all that time in, I don't know if it's the best way to make money, really, to be honest.
You have to be very careful of it.
I think so.
And it is a form of gambling.
Yeah.
It definitely is. If you don't know, if you haven't bought that at a massive discount, which I think your average person out there that knows nothing about property, that has never been in a training company, has never tuned into house to restore, and hasn't got some level of education on it.
Yeah.
That queues up with 30 or 40 psychopaths and outbids that property. With an ego kicks in that they've bought it.
Yeah.
And then they go into this world, well, me and Sharon are going to do this flip. And then you start to buy materials and you've never bought materials before.
Yeah.
So you've no discounts.
No.
You've no platinum discounts on them. You've no access to trades.
Yeah.
Your electrician might cost you 24 grand. Theirs costs about 6 grand to rewire a house because we give them so much work.
Yeah.
But again, all these things will stack up.
Yeah. Well,
Sharon and Mick may never do this property. As you say, that broken down, you could be on minimum wage.
Yeah. The other side of it is, though, this is a huge thing, and I don't think a lot of people realize this, but like you mentioned an electrician, right? Most electricians come in, they don't want to chase walls, and they don't want to patch walls, and people don't realize that. So then you have to find someone who's going to chase the walls.
Yep.
Then you have to find someone who's going to patch the walls. So it's not just the electrician, or even if you're, say, tiling your bathroom floor, and let's just say it's an apartment, just to keep it simple. You're tiling the bathroom floor and you're running a timber engineered floor in the hallway and the sitting room and you have the joint between the tiles and the timber engineered floor. Unless you are very, very clear with the carpenter and you say, look, there's going to be tiles in there and I want you to do this here and whatever and the floor is 18 mil or 12 mil or whatever it is and I want you to put a bar in there and you're that clear with them, that bar is most likely not going to go in there and you're going to end up with a joint between the bathroom and the hallway. And I know that that's just a little thing, but it's just a simple example of what loads of people can relate to. Like, the building game is rampant with things like that. There's loads of little jobs.
They're painful.
Yeah, but you need to have the experience to pick up on all those things. You need to catch them all. So when you're meeting the carpenter on day one, you need to say, okay, I need him to lay the floor, hang all the doors, do the skirting boards or whatever. But I also need him to do half a dozen other silly little things.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that will catch loads of people out. And they're the things that will cost you a fortune in the long run if you're not on top of them.
are most of your people that you're like QSing coming in and you're project manager for, yeah. are they all on the day rate? Are they all on price? Are they
price?
Okay. Yeah. So you're finding the price. Just give me a full list and then I'll do what's on the list. Yeah. Don't ask me to do anything else.
Yeah, well, look, something else might crop up. Like, let's face it, in the old house, like a Victorian house, if you got like a Victorian terrace house, you start taking off plasterboard in the return of the house, there's likely to be an issue with the joists. You know, you might have to double them up. You might have to replace them. You might have to do whatever, you know. You know, it's not uncommon to strip a wall, and particularly on those returns, whatever way they're built, they're just... There's always an issue with them, to be honest.
Just,
you know,
shouting out now. Well, that caught me. I might as well tell you about it. So the coven down in Donar, we took the coven off, and there was no coven in the back room. We were opening up the two rooms.
Yeah.
So we're putting a set of pocket double doors in. We're going to open up the room. So of course we had to match the coven, or else take it all down. Now, that coven was done with. If anyone knows the coven down there, it was done on site. It was bonded compound. It was shoveled in. So we're insulating 100 mil on the front wall. Naturally, we had to take it down, put the chisel up to try and pop it, realized it was bonding. It was like, oh my God. Eventually got it all off in pieces. That's gone. So we're talking now about getting a new bit of coven made.
It's massive money.
Oh, well, this caught me out by...
Yeah.
Anyway, so the meter is probably about 5 meters at the front. And then I said, well, if we're opening up the two rooms, I have to get the back room done.
Yeah.
So the coven is
big.
280 mil, 300 mil thick. Has to be pre-done.
Yeah.
So we used the crowd in Dublin, Coven or Coven. I'll put up the link to it anyway. But that was $2,000.
Yeah, yeah.
I did not see that.
Yeah, yeah.
He was like, Paul, I had to redo all these. And the poor devil, when he got there that day, one of them had snapped on him.
Yeah.
Whatever way he'd do a back and filling piece of it, it snapped in half. He had to go and redo another one. But it was $2,000 and it took 2 weeks to do.
Yeah.
And like, that's a massive, massive thing. If you were on investor finance there, or it was your project.
Yeah.
And say that wasn't accounted in there for, you might have allowed a couple of hundred quid for coven.
Yeah.
That's $2,000 you have to go to the credit card for, you have to go to the bank of mom and dad or your own funds.
Yeah, yeah.
It's
massive, yeah. But it is all those things, and it's all those jobs of who's going to pop the coven off you and all this sort of stuff, you know?
Yeah.
They are all, as you say, like, so you have to have an eye to foresee all of these things. Yeah. And I remember, like, the first job I took on years ago by myself, it was so basic. There was a lad I knew who had a gym, and I was predominantly QSing at the time, like at a private practice, and kind of had the idea going contracting, you know? So Andy, who had the gym, said, look, I need to do a bit of a landlord reinstatement here. Like, there's three things I need. I need the ceiling. Something happened to the ceiling in the toilet. He said, I need that all skimmed. I said, okay, grand. And then he said to me, I need the place painted. And then he said, I need a place clean. I was like, that's fine, right? So a new cleaner, new plasterer. And then my dad was a painter. So I was like, that's grand. Boxed off. Happy days, right? So I did it for him anyway. The plasterer came in, obliterated the place. It was wrecked. But just lesson learned, you know? Like, you just realize I have to be crystal clear with these guys. Yeah. And I didn't make a sausage in that job, but it was the best bit of learning I've ever had.
Yep. Even trying to control trades is, like, if you're not in this gig, and like, I'm a tradesman, obviously, I'm a plumber by trade, but I mean, if you're not in that gig and you can't control them people and you're outside and you think you're just coming in and going to shout and scream at a trade now because you may owe them $2,000.
Yeah.
You have to remember that they can walk out that door and get 500 quid tomorrow anywhere in Dublin.
Yeah.
Like, it times have just completely changed. And God love trying to do this in 5 or 6 years time, I don't know what the fuck is going to happen, because there's no one, there's no kids coming underneath.
No.
I brought in my little youngfella and my brother's little youngfella to site to wake them up.
Yeah.
Right? Two of them worked hard, but them lads are asleep. And I was like, this doesn't, you know, I'm not going to pay you.
Yeah.
If you just walk around with earphones in your ear.
Yeah, yeah.
Brush the floors and wake real work. And there's nobody following them footsteps.
No.
Air carpenter we had in there today. Like, I said, when was the last time there was a young lad with you? Said, oh, I've never had one.
Yeah.
You know, he's 15 years in carpentry.
Yeah.
So God love 5 or 6 more years or 10 more years of this.
Yeah. And you know what? Like, the concern as well is that there's a lot of trades that aren't really respected, like, in the sense that I don't think tiling is something that's that well respected. I don't think painting is something that's people have any respect for, to be honest. And plastering is something as well that's totally unrespected. That's just from what I see, you know, and people don't place the value on it. But they're the things that actually pull the job together. Because if you go and buy expensive tiles, you want someone really good, you know. to tile the bathroom or the kitchen floor or whatever, you know. And likewise, if you're putting in expensive fittings and fixtures into their property, you need a really tasty painter in there to make the place pop, you know.
Yeah.
Because if you don't get it, it just...
You're going to lose it on the sale price. You're going to lose
crap,
it.
Like, yeah. You know. Yeah. And the same with plastering. Like, if the walls just aren't good, you're going to give the carpenter, you know, a challenging job, to be fair, depending on what he's doing, if he's putting beading or paneling on walls or whatever. And you're also going to give the painter an awful lot of extra work as well. So there are three things that are really
crucial.
I think so. And then other random things, like everyone loves to get a bit of wallpaper put underneath their toilet in the stairs, you know. And we were doing a job there and to try and get someone to hang. More or less two lengths of wallpaper. Two rolls of wallpaper. I got a fella and he did such a brilliant job. No one else wanted to touch it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, we just bought some over off Jerry Kelly over in Longmile.
Ah, right.
Great, great selection of stuff too. And great, great, fantastic help. But it leads me then to another question then. I have a load of questions for you today. all in my memory. Again, how many people are you seeing, because you obviously go through tons of properties.
Yeah.
How many people are you seeing in the downsizing model? Like, again, no stock really for them to downsize in, but I just noticed an apartment block coming up through Walkinstown.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've seen that one.
No.
On the front of the apartment block, I think there's 50 apartments in it.
Okay.
These apartments are rented out to 55s and over only.
Oh.
I was like, boy, Jesus. So obviously a lot of old couples in Walkinstown, 4 or 5 bed houses.
Yeah, yeah.
They're obviously low energy renting, perfect time to sell.
Yeah.
And then they go and rent one of these and they know it's a low key community that they've lived in all their life.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're nice high end A-rated apartments.
Yeah, yeah.
How many people would you see? Because I see you pop stuff from Fox Rock and...
Yeah, very few.
Very few.
Like genuinely, Paul, like next to no one. And I think the big concern is, I think people have this idea, I'd love to do it, but their worry is that, well, what if we sell the family home and we can't buy something?
Yeah.
The other side of it is then as well, and this is a crucial thing in property as well, I think, and you've probably copped this yourself, but there's so many people at the 400,000, 500,000, 600,000 euro price point.
Yeah.
Probably the most heated price point, I'd imagine, right? And a lot of these people that are selling the houses that are 5 bedrooms, the Fox Rock houses, all this sort of stuff. A lot of those houses, I know it sounds mad not, but they're 850, 950, 1.2, 1.5 million. They're big dosh.
Yeah.
You actually get better value the higher end of the market than you do. Like 1.5 million is going to go and get you a lot more than 600,000 euro at the moment because there's less people at that 1.5 million bracket. Obviously, you have to buy right and whatever. But that's just how I've sort of seen
it. You've hit the nail on the head. Our financial advisor, Ask Paul.
Yeah.
He says the exact same thing as that.
Yeah.
You know, and he often even says for young people coming up or people that's getting out, you're not buying a house, you're buying a mortgage.
Yeah.
Which is true. You are. You're like, if you've gone through, we've done 3 or 4 mortgages last year, man, it's so fucking stressful.
Pain in the arse.
It is so stressful. Like, if you're at the rising private finance and you're trying to exit out.
Yeah.
I mean, and you've got these things changing all. There's Dilusk up there, actually. We were at an event from there last week. But I mean, if you've got all them different challenges coming at you and you've just completed a refurb.
Yeah.
Your brain is mashed potatoes. Like, it's hard work. It's not easy.
Yeah. So I think the big thing is, I think a lot of older people, like, they're very much like, okay, well, I'm only getting that for me 600,000 euro. I'm on, you know?
Yeah.
And I think there's a bit of that going on as well. And again, it comes back to what I was saying about the property types. I think that shared model that I mentioned, there's definitely scope for more retirement villages and more developments like what you were talking about. Yeah. 100%. And if people had that reassurance that they know, if I sell my house for £1 million, I can buy a 2-bedroom bungalow in my neighborhood for 400 grand for argument's sake. They're happy and they know they can definitely get it, you know?
Yeah.
So it's definitely something that we're going to need as well. So to have a more functioning market. So, you know, and it's just you're looking at two different ends of the market really, you know?
Yeah. And a release stock too.
Because people are in the wrong type of property.
Yeah. Well, let's say, like, if you've got one person living in Dalkey and they've lived there all their life and they're 77.
Yeah.
And they're trying to downsize to a smaller place in Dalkey.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nobody there for that transition. Let's say that the old man died and the woman's on her own and she's in a property that's worth $1 million.
Yeah.
But to her, it's not because she can't get up the fucking stairs.
Yeah.
So that's another fantastic business. If someone could align that business, but again, they're going to run into stock issues.
Yeah.
You have to try and find the property. And then if you've got a woman, say, in her 70s, and they've lived in a certain way all their life, you have to try and, I don't, I can only imagine this, but you're going to have to try and replicate what she had to this smaller bungalow.
Ah, very difficult.
And release that stock, man.
Yeah. Great remember business. Seeing something on TV or something, and there's someone that actually specializes in doing that. They kind of go into the family home, like the big house, if you like.
Yeah.
Excuse me, take all the bits and then make the smaller house
look like
kind of look like the old house.
Well, know? Because change, a lot of people don't like change, but unfortunately, if they haven't gone up the stairs for years, and they maybe, I know one person in particular was living from their sitting room now because they couldn't go up the stairs and they didn't want the stair lift because these people get, you know, if you have pride in your life all the time and
you
know, the last thing you want to do is say, I can't go up the stairs, but they need to have a company or a business to be able to go in and say, well, look, there is a 6 units coming at the top of the road, which are a downsized bungalow and it's a gated community and it's lovely and it will work for you.
Yeah.
And I think that's a lot of things. I believe the planners are a little bit more lenient on, now I don't know, I'm only hearing this from the grapevine.
Yeah.
If you're doing a development of 12 units and it's to do with downsizing or it's to do with residential, as sorry, it's to do with community living for older folks.
Yeah.
They're a little bit more lenient. They want them, like, they really need them.
So that was the big challenge is, right? And here's the thing. This is the way my brain works sometimes, is that the first generation of those retirement villages is sort of easy, right?
Yeah.
So the ones in Walkinstown, they're a dollar, right? And let's just say you could buy them and they were 300 grand, just for argument's sake. So you sell your house and you buy it. And then someone dies and, like, that couple or that person that's living in that dies.
Yeah.
Do you know? And then if you're selling it, do you sell it with the restrictions of you have to be 55 or older, you know? Gets a bit messy.
Definitely gets messy, 100%. It's probably have to check the rules and regulations on that one. So where do you see the market then heading? Where are you seeing opportunity on that? On like, let's say we look into your Instagram page.
Yeah.
Where are you actually seeing the real, real value? Are you watching them things close out till the end? No. You're seeing property
As in these?
Yeah.
Yes and no, like you kind of see things and you see things sitting there for a long time. But it's very difficult then to kind of, like, unless you really scrutinize the property price register to see what some of these properties have sold for, you know. But I definitely do think, like, if you're asking me where I see it all going, I think there's definitely better value at the higher end of the market. I know I couldn't have said that already. And then I think a lot of the stuff we're building is great, but we're not building stuff that we need to be building, as you say, the retirement villages, and as I say, the shared living spaces, right? So I think that's something that we need to look at big time, just so as we're kind of people that can right size them and whatever, you know.
Yeah.
And then what else? Do you choose something else in there as well?
Yeah, around the country, are you seeing any? Is your team or your crowd bringing back opportunities around the country? Like, you hearing any really hot spots for investors now to start?
Do you know what? Like, where
investment is
going? Yeah, like Dundalk, like a few places, right? Dundalk seemed to be one place where there was a few bob to be had, right? That's it.
I keep hearing Dundalk. Yeah,
Dundalk, right, is one place. And the other place, possibly Wexford Town.
Okay.
But they're planning things in Wexford Town, but it's a bit vague what they're planning. So they're two places. But like if you look at other places that were up and coming, like Drogheda, for example, there's no value.
Yeah.
There's any value there at the moment.
One of our guys in here buys and sells property all the time.
Yeah.
Doesn't want to make killings on it. Just makes enough that, you know, he buys. If he'd done 25 grand in the uni, he's happy with that.
Yeah.
Drogheda would have been his little point.
Yeah.
You often pick up a little deal there, flip it out, turn it around, gets 26, 27 grand. Doesn't need to make 200 grand. But again, zero stock.
Yeah.
I was like, when was the last time you got one? I can't. I can't, because them things need 20 or 30 grand to fix.
Yeah.
And at the market level, like investor or people that's selling it want to sell it.
Yeah.
And they don't care about what you've to put 30 in to make it on the way out.
Yeah.
They're selling for, say it's 250 and the property is naturally for a flip model, you could only pay 200.
Yeah.
Well, that market's gone. It's too hard to get. People are paying the 250 knowing that they still have to put another 30 or 40 in there. So
yeah,
he hasn't bought any stock in Drogheda. He said Drogheda at the moment's on fire.
Yeah. I do think Dundalk, and I've even just sussed a few little things out in Dundalk. But then if you look up Dundalk, there's so few things for sale there as well. Yeah. You know, that's the other side of it. Wexford Town, definitely. They'd be two places that I'd look at. And arguably anywhere where there's a bit of a university that's being developed. So I think they're developing some sort of education campus in Wexford.
Yeah.
And there's investment going in. Or there's a new bridge going in. And that's why Wexford Town.
And Enniscorthy type thing.
Yeah. That's why that is probably a good place, you know. And then I was going to add something else there. So those two places for definite. Tremor is the other place I was thinking of. Like, they're planning great things in Tremor.
Yeah.
And they're closing streets off and it's becoming a bit of a foodie town. And I know it was kind of a place where people went on their holidays and it was a bit of a kind of mini Bray sort of thing. And it was like that for years. But I think it's like an up and coming place and there's so great plans.
Keep your eye out for the resi units down there too, that people might know the trick in there.
Absolutely. Because they're calling that the Copper Coast along there as well, aren't they? Like, it's kind of become a tourism attraction, I think, like kind of Wexford. I think it's Wexford up along to East Cork, sort of.
Yeah.
We call it the Copper Coast.
Even Gorry now. You can't get anything in Gorry.
No.
One of our other lads is looking at one down in Gorry. Fine little house, fine little site, but it's 265 or 270. Mad money.
There's a friend of mine looking to move there, like set up home there, and he was sending me stuff. And I just wouldn't, even if I needed a house, I just wouldn't spend it there. Like, it's just off the charts, you know. Yeah,
it's gone mad.
Mad.
Oh, love Wexford as well. So any final tips? How can people, you have a couple of things coming up. You often do a couple of webinars to educate people.
Yeah, I do. So I'm planning a couple of things. I was planning to do a webinar this side of the summer and it just didn't happen. I was sick in April. Just didn't happen then, to be honest. So there's two webinars that I'm planning at the moment. One is aimed at people who are looking to buy a house and it'll involve a building surveyor, if I can convince Tom Rooney to get involved.
You dress him up with someone else. He doesn't like to see the screen when I'm setting it.
Is that what it is?
I don't know.
I haven't looked at the screen.
I'll work with him on that.
So there'll be a building surveyor, an estate agent for someone who's like buying a house and they're buying their first home and they haven't a clue about how the whole thing works. And there'll be an estate agent to explain the process and give tips on bidding and that type of thing and negotiating.
How to even present properly.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah. Because that is a huge thing. There's a bit of a dynamic there and people don't understand that. And even when you're dealing with an agent, if the agent has a couple that have looked at four houses that they've been outbid on, they're more likely to get the fifth house that crops up because they're genuine and they're showing up even when they get told no. So 100%, you're spot on. I'm planning to bring a panel together of experts in each of their individual fields because people get very overwhelmed when it goes to legals. They haven't a clue what's going on and they get really stressed about it because they don't know. It's a control thing, basically, and because people are unsure. So that's the idea with that one. And it's mainly aimed at first-time buyers who are looking at buying their first home, essentially. And then the other one I'm looking at doing is for people who are planning a renovation and explaining some of those points that I've made to you about really having your wits about you and the importance of design.
Well, you would have to be, like, and I'm going to say this again for anyone who's listening in, you would have to be absolutely delusional or a big bank account to suck up them problems that are going to come in a refurb.
Yeah.
Because I'm doing this since I'm 13.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you now, problems even today are changing all the time.
Yeah.
And they come with a fee.
Yeah.
And if you don't have deep pockets, you're going to get hurt. Or you haven't got a pair of hands, you can do it.
Yeah.
But I mean, to get a small bit of education on a webinar even would literally light it up, give you a guideline, give you a bit of a template and have someone to ring. Or maybe if they stepped in along with you and said, well, look, we are doing this.
Yeah.
This is our home. Never done it before.
Yeah.
We're not fucking idiots. We want to have
proper advice. It's very important. And just having an understanding of, like, you have 100 grand. What's 100 grand really going to do to your house?
Yeah.
And being realistic about it. Like, I met a couple last week and I went to have a look at something and they said, oh, well, you know, we've sourced the kitchen, we've sourced the windows and we've 160 grand. I'm not going to talk to myself. That's not bad. It's a bit tight, but it's probably doable. And then I said, just so we're crystal clear, does the 160 grand, like, that's aside from the windows and the doors? And I said, no, like, the cost of them are coming out of the 160 grand. I said, how much are the windows and doors? They said, well, collectively 55,000. So I said, we're down to the 105. They said, yeah, 105. And I said, no. I said, like, this is a 200, 215 grand project all day long. And they turned around to me and said, oh yeah, you know what? The architect got a QS involved there a couple of months ago. He said the same thing, 200 grand. And they didn't heed the advice. So if you're paying for advice and you're dealing with good people, listen to those people because they've done it dozens of times.
Yeah.
Do you know?
Yeah. And it's a very painful trap to be in. If you're sitting there with a property half renovated and you're looking at your bank, you're looking at your uncle there, you know, you usually, if you've bought a property, and you've got to that point where you've got the keys and you may have got a strip out done.
Yeah.
Most of your money's gone.
Yeah.
Now you have to start thinking, where am I going to get the rest?
Yeah.
Unless mommy or daddy have big, you know, and they're going to fund you. But again, there's going to be a stop off of that too. But I mean, if you haven't planned this thing correctly, you are literally going to find yourself in a dark hole very quickly.
Yeah. 100%.
So just shout out the dates and then they're going to come in the next
year. Yeah, so if whoever's watching, if you don't follow me, give Houses to Restore a follow. And I also have a website, housestorestore.ie. So if there is anyone watching who wants to, say, book in for that home renovation assessment, I also do Zoom calls with people just if they're at the preliminary stage of looking at properties and they might be just trying to get a gauge of how much certain type of house, you know, people that are looking at houses in Cabra and they might want to figure out, well, how much does it cost? Yeah, this type of house. So I can kind of cover that off in a Zoom. So that's all on housestorestore.ie, and I'll be launching then the webinars through the Instagram page. So the best thing I'll say is follow the Instagram page and the rest will follow from there.
Brilliant. So it all happens on the Instagram page.
Yeah.
Lovely stuff. One last one then, and then we let you wrap up. And thanks a million for jumping over, and thanks a million for giving us some of your inside knowledge in this. What is the best property deal you've seen?
Oh, Jesus.
Because everyone gets to see the great ones.
That one that you showed me in that one that you showed me in Banagher 2 years ago.
Oh, well, I still have that.
That seems to stack up quite well.
Slide back my bar of gold. That is that one. That is a great
one. I actually really like this. When I came in, I thought it was a complimentary bottle of aftershave, but look, no, it's nice.
Yeah, the 1 million. That's
what it's like, isn't it?
That was our last podcast. We were talking about gold, money.
Okay.
So you like that project?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that would appeal to me, yeah. I said it to you at the time, yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's a clever one, and the way you have it at the back, there's scope for the sort of more townhouses, and then you have, I'm not sure what your plans are for the ground floor, if it's going to be a commercial or retail or what.
No commercial, just all...
all resi.
Yeah, we're pre-approved now, we're all done.
Yeah,
so
that's great.
I'll shoot you the plans, you can have a look at them.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really interesting one, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, lovely stuff. All right, Shay, thanks a million for dropping
in. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, you're absolutely brilliant, and... look, onwards and upwards. And as I said, say to most people again, if you're struggling to find a studio and you want to do that debate and you want to have it here, we can get out 4 people for you.
Yeah, yeah.
Come in here and definitely, and I'd love to listen into that one as well.
Brilliant.
All right, Shay, thanks a million. And
thanks, Paul.
Thanks for listening in this week. And we will chat to you again with another great, great host, great speaker next week. Chat to you all very soon. So folks, if you liked what we talked about tonight, don't forget to give us a like, a follow and a share and subscribe. And again, go and follow House to Restore Ireland. They've got some great content and I'll keep you really up to date with the property market here in Ireland. Chat to y'all soon.